car that you stole when you were 16.
Yeah.
Like that.
It was a different time.
That's right. So I start off all of the interviews with the same question, which is, and you have a unique answer to this. What's your earliest memory of being part of the group or the park? You know, what's the beginning for you?
I remember when I first moved there, I was 11 years old. I moved from Cambria Heights to Queens Village, Belrose. And I don't know, it was fifth grade. And when I first coming around, I'm going back to the story, you're involved in it. And I tell everyone my name was Jimmy or Jim. And then you said, Jimmy New Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Eagles song was big at that time, The New Kid Comes to Town. And then
okay.
Everyone said, hey, Jimmy New Kid. And New Kid involved into Noogie.
Yeah.
And I totally lost the name Jimmy and had a new first name.
Yeah, I think there was a period of time where if we asked people, what's Noogie's name, they'd say, Noogie, what do you mean? Like, they wouldn't know that your name was Jimmy, and they definitely didn't know your last name was Walsh. You know, sorry, that's just you, that person didn't exist.
Yeah, it was strange. And it's funny, every time I talk to somebody or I run into somebody, and they say, yeah, I know you, and I say, Jim Walsh, and I say, no, who? And I said, Noogie. And they go, oh, yeah, I remember you.
I never knew a kid named Jimmy Walsh.
Yeah, yeah. The ironic part about it, there was another Jim Walsh in our grade.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember him. Kind of like...
it kind of worked.
Sandy blonde hair.
Yes.
Blonde, yeah. You know, light hair. Yeah. I did, you know, outside of you saying his name, I don't remember ever having a discussion with him or a conversation with him, you know.
I never really talked to him even when we were in school together. I think he was annoyed with me because I had the same name and I was the new guy. So I kind of messed up his life a little bit at that time.
Yeah.
So, we move on.
Yeah. So you lived across the street from Lon.
Yeah.
And I can remember the day that you moved in or the day after you moved in, because we were Lon had a car parked in his driveway, and we were sitting on the back of the car kind of staring at your house, waiting mm-hmm. for somebody to come out so we could see who moved in, you know.
Okay.
That was before we knew you, but I don't remember meeting you per se. Do you have any memory of that? Like, I don't remember you.
Exact moment.
Where was it that you connected?
I think I came outside. I don't remember if it was the first day or whatever, and you guys were out there.
Yeah. Okay. And all right.
Because I remember that day. I remember looking out the upstairs bedroom window, and you guys were across the street. And I waved, and no reaction from you guys. And at that time, if you remember, I was very introverted and didn't really talk much. And
yes,
so it was very difficult. But I went outside, and we just kind of met, you know.
Yeah, you know, knowing you, that must have taken an enormous amount of courage. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, new neighborhood, new everything, middle of the school year.
Yeah.
I mean, that first year, I was still going to school in Cambria Heights, and I didn't start in Lodge until the sixth grade.
Oh, okay. But that must have been a commute.
Yeah, I hopped the bus and went down Springfield Boulevard.
Jamaica Avenue?
It wasn't bad.
Well,
that's how we kind of got to, that's it, kind of was just me coming outside and we just started talking and that was it.
I, you know what, now that you say that, that is that day that I remember.
Okay.
We were in Paul's driveway. What I did not remember was you actually coming out and connecting with us. But yeah, I'm sure you didn't need to do a lot of work. We probably did all the talking. No,
you guys did all the talking, which was fine with me.
Yeah. But I can imagine just the group that we were.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you couldn't get a word in edgewise if you wanted to.
Well, you know, there's so many things going on at once. Is usually the dynamic of the group. Somebody's picking on somebody else or whatever's going on.
Yeah. So when you look back, what's your big view of us growing up there? What do you take away from growing up in Queens Village and Braddock Park and us as a group? What's the takeaway for you?
It was a great time. I mean, we were outside all day, all the time. We had our routines. We'd go to the park. We would meet and whether we were playing basketball or handball or Johnny Rides the Pony or Ring Olivio, whatever the game was. And this is the earlier memories. As we got older, we did other things, but and we were like a tight group because we had we saw each other grow up basically throughout 10 years.
Yeah. And despite being the new kid, you felt like you were in. I mean, you were it. You were part of the fabric, right?
Yeah. After a while, I had to get into the group. But after a little bit, I felt very comfortable. It was a good place for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned Johnny on the Pony. There's probably no one out there today that would understand what you just said. And never mind that it's a game. I actually have some photographs. Actually, not that I'm ever on Facebook, but my Facebook header is a Johnny on the Pony photograph.
There you go.
Kathy Marks is the pillow. Yep. Is the pillow. And then there's the lineup. I don't know who took that photograph, but I ended up with it. Okay. But that was an amazing game, and I remember you because you were strong and you were fast, being a player. You know, a Johnny on the Pony professional.
Yeah, it was a fun time, and we'd be all wedged in there.
and hurt, you know, that game did hurt.
I could say we were a close group then.
Yeah. You had your head up somebody else's ass.
Unfortunately, that wasn't a good part.
And then we would play against the big guys once in a while.
Oh, yeah. I know that was not. I don't think that was very smart of us, but yeah.
No, that was murder.
I remember
coming home with black and blues and limping, and feeling like something was broken, even though nothing was, but. That was definitely a rough sport.
Yeah, but you know what? I wouldn't trade it for anything.
it was an amazing game, and to explain it to someone today, I mean, you need 30 minutes to talk about why on earth you were doing the things that you were doing, and how one team beat the other team, and what was the strategy? You know, I don't know if you remember, we used to send Paulie Sojan first, right? Because he could only get over he could get on top of the first guy.
Right. Okay.
And then you would, all the guys who could jump, we would use Paulie, and you'd push even higher in the air, and then you'd come down on the line, you know, with your elbows and your knees. And break them, you know, and I remember that being a big strategy at that time.
Yeah, hey, that worked. that was a good job.
I can't remember if you had what would be considered like a best friend in the group? Often, you know, those things rotated and changed, and different people were connected with different people at different times.
You know,
anybody that you were particularly connected with?
Probably, I would say in the end, it was Jimmy Mantone.
No kidding.
I mean, as we grew older, we ended up playing in a band together.
No kidding. And what do you play and what does he play?
I play the keyboards and he plays the bass.
No, this is all new. See, this is what I'm saying, that this thing happened and I had no idea about it. Yeah. And if who else was in the band?
Well, it was my brother.
Oh, your older brother?
Yeah, older brother John. And we had a singer and a drummer from another neighborhood. And when we were in college, we played a place in Elmont. It was called the Belmont Park Inn. And we invited everybody from the neighborhood. And
no kidding.
We packed the place. You know,
no kidding.
All the guys that were around. I mean, some of the guys might have been away at college or whatever. And it was a great time. We really had a good time. I think we even got Joe Howard to come up and sing.
No. All right, I'm going to have to ask him about that now.
All Along the Watchtower. The old Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix song.
Yeah. Jimi Hendrix, right. Well, originally Bob Dylan.
Yeah, so he made his big debut with us.
Wow. So where is Jimmy Mantone these days?
He's sort of, I think he's in Queens still, living in Flushing. I don't hear from him much now. I think he's retired from the police force.
Oh, he became a cop?
Yeah, he became a detective.
Oh, okay.
He did pretty good with the police. And his wife's sister married my brother.
Okay.
So we share a niece and a nephew together.
Oh, that's very nice.
So we're somewhat related, I guess. Uncles in law, if
that's
you want
great.
To say.
Okay, well, I never knew you guys were close. You
know what
it was
the music. As we were in high school, we started playing. We both had an interest in it. Because
he was
we saw when he was 14, 15 years old. Right before he was going to start high school, he wanted so badly to make the basketball team at Molloy. He went to Molloy. So every day he'd be out at the park practicing. So a lot of times I go out
all
there.
All day?
Yeah. All day. And I would play with him as long as I could. And that's how it started. We spent a lot of time on the basketball court, and then we had interest in music and so we became, you know, good friends back then.
And he make the team?
No, he did not all that way. He made the baseball team, but he didn't make the basketball team. And he was good. But
he was an intense guy. And I always admired his ability to work as hard as anybody worked. I mean, there's nobody who worked harder at basketball than Mantone.
You're not kidding.
You know, I mean, he would be out there at, 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And we'd come up at 11 o'clock and he's already covered in sweat and, practicing his turnaround move. And
turnaround, that was it. That was his shot. That's right.
Yeah.
That's funny. I was gonna say.
Anybody else come to mind?
I was close with Mike World for a while. He lived right behind my house.
Yeah, I could, kind of I catty, could see, catty corner.
I could see his yard from my backyard.
Yeah, that's right.
We spent a lot of time together and we hung out a lot.
Mike passed this past year.
Yeah, I know.
What do you remember of Mr. Worrell?
He was an intense guy, I tell you that. He's a little, you know, off the wall, intense, like to have fun. But he was also a good friend. I mean, he stuck up for me at times, and we had a lot of fun over the years. I remember his father was kind of rough on him.
Do you remember his dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember his dad very, very well. I was once hit by a car. You know the bar on the corner of Jamaica Avenue and your street?
Yeah, the Belt. What is it? Belt?
Yeah.
Halfway Tavern.
Yeah, so Mr. Worrell sort of lived in that bar. Mike's brother, Peter, and I were on a bicycle. I was on the handlebars and Peter was driving. And we were crossing that street in front of the bar. And the light was turning from green to red, right? So it turned yellow, and Peter decided that we could go. Well, there was a car that decided he was going to beat the light, and he stepped on the gas, and he hit us. I got hit pretty badly, and when I rolled off the car, you're in shock, and I was scared and I started to run, but my knee was bleeding and I was limping. This cop caught me, and that just made me even more terrified.
Sure.
But I told him that my parents weren't home, and we were literally right across the street from the Worrell's house, so he put me on the stoop. And then, of course, he brought Peter also. Peter was not hurt. And then Peter said, "My father's over in the bar." So Mr. Worrell, the cop went and got Mr. Worrell. Mr. Worrell was fairly intoxicated. And when he got to us on the steps, he started screaming at us because we interrupted his beer. And he was going to go back. And he was going to finish the beer, and then he would take me to the hospital. And I remember thinking, I don't know if I want to get in the car with him. You know, he's drunk and he's angry, and you know, so I ended up hobbling home and waiting for my mom to get home, and then she took me. But yeah, Mr. Worrell, he was really something.
I saw, you know, unfortunately, I saw the bad side of him too sometimes. So it was not good in that household sometimes. So then me and Mike would take off, because I'd be over his house a lot, and we would take off and get out of there.
Yeah, but his father died fairly
young. Yeah.
Beyond. Yeah. I don't know. We were teenagers, I guess, or young teenagers.
Yeah.
And do you know what happened to his brother, Peter?
Peter's living in Pennsylvania, I believe. And I have spoken to him a few times. I think.
And he had a sister, Kathy.
Yeah. I think both his sisters have passed. I think Peter's the only one left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of his sisters, the oldest sister. I don't remember her name.
I thought the older one was Kathy
and Susan, right?
Susan, yes, you're right.
Yes, yep. Susan. And I think Kathy died years ago down in Florida. I think she was murdered. And then I think Susan passed a few years ago. So I think it's Peter and his mother are still around.
Oh, Mrs. Wuerl is still around. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just remarkable. I remember her very, very vividly. I have a very strong memory of her. Wow. Okay. Other things, other memories that come to mind for you?
Let's see. Well, I remember your father.
You do?
Yeah, we used to go to the house, and we go down to the house, and he'd be out there smoking a cigar.
That's right. Well, and he liked you. He liked you, and he liked Polly. Yeah, I think mainly because you guys were neighborhood guys, and you would be around a lot. You were around a lot, you know?
Yeah. So I remember that. That's a memory.
Yeah, sitting on the front steps.
Yep. Always saw him there.
Yep. He got multiple sclerosis when... We were in seventh grade when it happened.
Oh.
And then he passed away when I was 34 years old.
Okay.
Something around that. I mean, literally, he just, you know, was sitting in the chair and he died, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Nothing dramatic. And then my mom died. A number of years later, she had Alzheimer's, and I mean, it took her a matter of months.
Yeah, that's a terrible. My mom passed from Alzheimer's also 2 years ago. the last 10 years, she wasn't my mother anymore. So it was
that's right. Yeah, that's the saddest part of that disease is the people who have it leave long before they die. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it was a tough situation. And my dad, I lost young. I lost my dad in the eighth grade.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he died.
I don't remember that your dad passed.
Yeah, he died in the summer. Actually, I was out of town. I was up in Massachusetts with my sister's house. My sister was a lot older, 9 years older than us. And I was 14 years old, I guess. And he had a heart attack. Walked in the kitchen, dropped dead.
Wow.
And so that, you know, that impacted me a bit too back then.
Yeah. Well, In what way?
Just, you know, you realize that you people can die.
you realize your mortality.
Yes. Yeah. So it was, you know, shocking to me. I never lost anybody really like that before.
Yeah. And were you close with your dad?
My dad worked nights. So he was a postal worker. He worked in Brooklyn in the post office, and he would go every night dinner time, he's going off to work. And I didn't see him a lot, because when he was home during the day, he was sleeping, so we had to be quiet in the house. I couldn't have anybody over because he's sleeping,
right?
And then at night he's at work, so we did see him on the weekend. We were as close as we could be. It wasn't, to be honest with you, I don't think I knew him as well as I should have. Because we were on opposite schedules. You know, I had three sisters and two brothers. We were a big family.
And you were the youngest.
I was the second. I had a younger sister. I was a sister 2 years younger, same age as your brother.
I remember your older brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I came around so once in a while. They hung out more in Belrose than yeah. the park. They never went to the park or anything like that.
Well, they were also older.
Yeah, when we moved here, they were older. So my one brother is 3 years older than me, and the other one's 5 years older. So they were already established teenagers. And
yeah.
They went on their way.
Yeah. So you went to Van Buren for high school?
Yeah, I did.
And then what did you do? I left town at that point. What did you do after high school?
So my last year of high school, my mom decided to sell the house and we moved out to Westbury.
Oh. So
we left the neighborhood when I was about 17-18 years of age. But, you know, we were starting college. I went to college. I went to St. John's. So, you know, I didn't get to go away. I didn't get the away college experience.
Yeah. Most of us didn't.
Most of the
group did not. There was a few of us who did, but most of us did not.
But it was so once I got out of there and moved out, and so that kind of I started losing the group at that point because I wasn't living in the neighborhood anymore.
Yeah. But you stayed in touch with Mike Worrell and Mantone
basically, and Joe Howard went to St. John's too. I used to see him there. And,
okay.
And you know. Kind of, life started shifting. You move on with other things, and it changed at that time. I come back occasionally, see the guys. Easy Streets, I believe, was the bar. So
yep.
I knew if I went there during the college years and stuff, there'd be somebody in there. So I tried to get back occasionally and hang out there. So.
You'd get to see Fat Jerry or Commander.
Yeah, Jerry.
One of those guys.
He was a character, Jerry.
He was an absolute character. Do you remember him at all?
Yeah. Yeah, he used to pick on me, sure.
So what was his thing with you? He used to call me Mickey the Dicky.
Loogie the Nugget. I don't remember exactly how he put it, but... Uh-huh. Hey, what kind of name is that? He picked on that name.
Yeah. Well, he had a name for everybody. And if he didn't have a name for you, you felt bad about it.
Yeah. So why don't they like me?
Like if he didn't pick on you, that means he's not paying attention to you. And so you felt bad. Now you also felt bad if he did pick on you because sometimes he could be cruel. But
he could be, yeah. Yeah, he was.
And what was your relationship with Lon? Growing
up? It was good.
Across the street.
Yeah, across the street, we used to go to high school together every day. We'd meet and we'd walk up to the school and walk home, and we hung out a lot. You know, his mom and his dad were great. Spent a lot of time over there.
And they wouldn't even know you were there because there were just so many kids running around there.
Yeah, that was true. And interesting thing is, years later, I was living in Rockville Center in New York, in same town as him.
Oh, Paul, that's where Paul lives?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Rockville Center. And a couple of people from Queens Village I ran into there. Jean Lisinski, what I think her name was.
Yo, Jean.
Jean,
Oh, that's interesting. So she came up, we had a reunion of sorts.
Okay.
Maybe I'm gonna say 20 years ago. out on the island, I can't even tell you where it was, but somewhere out on the island, And I had I was living overseas at the time, so I was in the States. Marianne organized it.
Yeah.
And this woman came up to me, and she says, "Mickey Pode." And I said, "Hi." And she says, "You don't know who I am." I said, "I have to say, I do not know who you are." And she said, "I'm Jean Lesenskis." And I said, "No, you're not. I'm sorry. You don't look anything like the picture in my head of Jean Lesenskis. Yeah. I know who Jean Lesenskis is, and you're not her." And she said, "No, wow. It's me." But she convinced me that it was her. But if you remember her as a kid, she was like bone thin.
Yes.
Like not skinny. Yeah, not skinny. She was way beyond skinny. And not that she's heavy now. She looks normal. But
yeah.
Her features were so sharp as a child. Mm-hmm. You know, pointy chin, pointy nose.
Yep.
And now she's much more, you know, soft. So I didn't even recognize her. But yeah, I met her at that that event that was held.
Yeah. The first time I met her was, as adults.
Yeah.
Was at the school bus stop. I'm taking my daughter to the bus stop. And I see a woman there with her daughter and there's a couple other parents there. And I say, wow, she looks very familiar to me. And I think she recognized me first, and then we started talking. And she married Higgins. Remember what was her name? Marianne Higgins. Mary.
I thought there was
Eileen Higgins. Yeah, she married her brother. He's a year older than us.
Jim Higgins. I don't know. I don't remember him. I remember Eileen. Yeah,
I remember him. He was a quiet guy too. Back in those days, and we married him. And Gene was very good friends with Lisa Ravitt, so I used to see her a lot coming into the neighborhood.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's interesting. Wow, who else have you seen?
Another neighbor. Joni Hyland. Is another Rockville Center neighbor, and we have the daughters the same age.
No kidding. Do you see her at all now?
Not now, because I've moved from Long Island. I'm living in Maryland right now.
Oh, where are you in Maryland?
Columbia, Maryland.
You live in Columbia. Wow. Okay, my brother-in-law used to live in Columbia. I lived down in Bethesda for a while.
Okay.
So I'm very, very familiar with where you are.
Okay. Yeah, it's nice here.
I also bought
a house in North Carolina. I think that's where I'm going to eventually settle down in. So I'm really back and forth between two places.
Nice. Well, what brought you to Columbia?
My job.
Okay. What do you do?
Right now, I'm a senior manager for Verint Systems. We do artificial intelligence, bots, security, video recordings, a lot of government work.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Excuse me. And the house in North Carolina is more like, let's say, rural?
Yes. It's in New Bern, North Carolina. I'm right on the water.
New Bern.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm right on the water. If you know, it's up by Fairfield Harbor, and it's very nice. I'm right on the Neuse River.
Very nice. Very nice.
So eventually, when I decide to stop working, I'll move down there and look at the water, I guess.
Great. Any other thoughts on? Growing up in Queens Village or the group or anything that comes to mind?
The one thing I always remember and probably my one of my best memories was Joe Howard when I was moving from Queens Village to Westbury. He threw a surprise party for me, like a goodbye party. And he had a keg in his basement, and we had a big party to celebrate the, you know, that I was leaving. Well, not celebrate, I was leaving. Well, maybe you were. I don't know. But it was just was such an emotional feeling for me at the time that they thought enough that, and the little guys thought enough of it to throw this party for me.
Wow. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. But I will also tell you, I'm not surprised. Because I think, you know, my recollection of you, well, again, you were kind of a quiet guy. You were always there, but you were on the quiet side. But it never diminished people's feelings that you were 100% us. You know what I mean? You were as much a part as anybody. You know, not everybody was a talker. You know, Joe was a talker, right?
He was.
And even I was not always a talker. You know, I was much more of an observer myself. So I appreciate, you know, your perspective on things, because in many ways I was similar to that. But I'm not surprised, because I know all the guys felt very close to you and felt strongly about you. So that's very, very thoughtful. But again, very on par for Joe.
Yeah, I know. He's a great guy. Yeah. Just see that he just had a bad temper sometimes when we used to play handball or sports. He would get upset.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't remember that? Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't remember Joe.
This guy, I'll have to... very nice, but sometimes he would just get mad. I don't know, not mad at you or anything, just mad that some you know, maybe he missed the ball or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I remember that to some degree. Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. Well, that's my questions, unless you have questions yourself or thoughts or whatever.
Like you said, it was a great time, great bunch of people, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And, you know, I was happy when Joe reached out to me and gave me this text group that I just recently joined. So, and yes. Now see, I get to talk to you. And
yes. No, I think for me... the group is as much a part of me today as it was when we were little. It's a family feeling. It's kind of a roots thing. And I could, you know, if I'm in New York and I can reach out to Linda and have lunch with her, or I can call Chris and we'll have dinner, and it's meaningless. It's as if I saw you yesterday. And we're just picking up our conversation from then. It's as easy as that. There's no, it's like a brother, you know, a brother or a sister, where you don't have to explain yourself and you don't have to tell, you know, what I've been doing the last 5 years, because I haven't seen you in 5 years. So I got to tell you all about that first. We just pick up the conversation where we left off, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's a good
thing. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, I used to tell my boys at bedtime bedtime stories about the park. Some of it was made up. Like there was this character named Paulie Blobstein, and he was this really fat kid, and he would use his chubbiness as kind of like a weapon, you know, like he could lay on top of you and crush you, and he could do that. But it was all centered around Paulie Sojourn, of course, you know, this character. So I used to tell the boys these stories, but one of the things I used to always say to them was, when you have friends like this at a young age, it's where you learn about love. It's where you learn to love somebody else. And it sounds corny, but it's that moment where I'm less concerned about me and I'm more concerned about you. It's exactly what Joe did.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't thinking about Joe. He was thinking about you.
Yeah. And he proved that.
And that's what we learned in that group. As much as we picked on each other and teased each other and all that other stuff, at the bottom line, we would throw ourselves in front of a train for each other.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no question that if anybody ever needed anything, you just need to raise your hand. And you know, you get five guys knocking on your door saying, what do you need? How much do you need? Right. And I wouldn't hesitate. You know, others wouldn't hesitate on my behalf. And that's a remarkable thing today.
Yeah, it is. I think I've been away from the group too long. I'm realizing that now, the more we talk.
Yeah.
I miss it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Even today, you know, if you get a chance to run into somebody and, you know, grab a beer, grab a bite to eat or something, all those feelings come right back. You know, like when Chris comes out here on business once in a while, or I'm in New York on business once in a while. And again, it's just as easy as walking up to the park, you know, just that easy. You sit down, you pick up a conversation.
There you go.
And you're on your way. I don't have any other relationship in my life like that. You know, no other friends from college or anywhere else that have the depth of my relationship with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, we grew up together, so it's basically like family, you would say.
It is family. There's no doubt about it. And everybody has become an even better person. That's the other remarkable thing. You know, we've all grown up to be people who appreciate life and who think about the group as something special and can find our roots in this group for so many different things. But again, I think a lot of, you know, my family values came out of learning from the group, how to take care of one another, how to stick up for one another, how to play with one another, you know, play basketball, play frisbee, but you know, whatever that was, it was a remarkable learning experience, and it's with you today, you know.
Yep. I don't know. Oh, the best of times.
Yeah, really was. Okay, Jim.
Okay. Doug. That's good. Yeah, thanks. You're still responsible for that to this day.
I have to force myself to call you Jim. So
yeah, I know. I see the guys struggle sometimes. You know, when I run into them, they call me Jim, but I know what they really want to call me.
No doubt about it. All right. Well, I will send you the information on all of this, on this interview, and on all the other interviews that I've done. And okay. Again, you could do with it what you see fit. What I think you'll find is that they're all pretty different.
Okay.
They're all, you know, I wish I could tell you that, oh, you know, everybody says the same thing. Well, they don't at all. And that's the beautiful thing. Riles tells these beautiful stories. John Vaccaro has a totally different point of view. You know, I mean, everybody who's contributed, it's been a real pleasure to hear from their perspective.
Yeah.
You know. All right, Jim.
Okay.
I will see you online on our little text group. I don't usually participate too much on there, but I do read everything. I don't necessarily always have something to say.
Okay.
I suspect you're the same way. So
I am. I like to listen, but
yeah. Yeah. Me too. All right. All right, Nug. I will see you around. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Okay. Great. Good. Great talking to you.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.